No, now it's now we're recording. We're officially recording now.
All right. Webcomics Weekly.
Yeah, why am I always responsible for starting these out? Go, Chris.
I'm doing it. Webcomics Weekly podcast coming at you. Heyo. Got another week of greatness. This is a podcast about webcomics and the people who make them.
Wow. All right, I'm taking over. Webcomics Weekly.
That's my setup.
Webcomics Weekly. We're back for another week of
Realize that had to have an end.
All right. Webcomics Weekly, what's going on? You guys know who we are. It's Chris. It's Dave. It's Brad. It's Scott. We'll give our URLs at the end of this. We don't. Let's just start talking.
We'll kick it right off because this is a discussion we've wanted to have with our audience for a long time, and we've been kind of putting it off because, let's face it, for some people it's a little bit of a touchy subject, but it's time to have that talk, if you know what I mean.
I'm touchy about it already.
Today's talk, body odor and cartoonists. All right, let's do it.
I'm grumpy about this already.
Are you grumpy? Well, that's probably good. What we're going to talk about to kick off this podcast is... what's the best way to encapsulate this? Signing on with second-party entities to do stuff that maybe you're better off doing yourself. Is that a good way? Is there a better way of encapsulating that?
Well, what
is it second or third party?
What is the email that kind of? Do we have an email for this or no?
We do, but over the months we've had a couple. Some of them have asked about this contest, that contest, this PDF download system.
Their question was, I'm wondering if you think it's a good way for web cartoonists to transition to print, or are they better off retaining the copyright for the web comics and printing them on their own? What are the pros and cons? So there's an indistinctness the subject.
I'm glad you read that, Chris, too, because that kind of shows there's a little bit of a disconnect in priorities, too. I mean, making the transition to print, we need to talk about.
Well, so basically, the question is this. Is it better to – what do you feel about these companies that are popping up? And they're to various degrees. Some of them are holding contests. Some of them are just offering a service where it just seems to be kind of almost a too-good-to-be-true kind of thing where, you know, you just kind of give them control over your strip and then wait for the money to pour in, I guess? Is that what we're discussing?
Right. I think the
mindset can sort of be encapsulated in the – and we talked about this before. I'm an artist. I don't know how to handle business. Hey, these guys seem to know how to handle it. I'm going to go with them. And traditionally, like if you signed on with a publisher or a syndicate or something like that, you knew you were giving up 50% of your income. But you also knew based on track record, based on contract histories that stretch back 50 to 100 years, what you were getting into. And so you knew for the trade-off of signing with United Media or United Press, Universal Press Syndicate or Marvel, the trade-off was I'm giving up X of my creative content, but I'm getting Y in terms of livable income or a career starter or this or that. Mm-hmm. And so the context, I think, is coming from that sort of mindset. But you transpose that online with these new companies that neither have the track record of giving you either an income or a launchable career, and they're asking for as much, if not more, than traditional print companies would ask for.
I think the big difference now is there's a big difference between saying to yourself, well, should I self-publish this or should I submit it to Image or Dark Horse or a syndicate? Where, you know, you're involving yourself with the group, they're going to possibly take part ownership, maybe have some editorial or creative control. What we're talking about now is this new rash of companies who aren't waiting for people to submit stuff to them. They're actively seeking out webcomics people. They're actively seeking out content.
Why do you think that is? Whereas like a syndicate... A newspaper syndicate, they could sit back and wait for the cartoonist to come to them.
Well, because I think
why are these guys so active?
The track record has a big part of that because you knew, Chris, that if you were one of the 5 or 6,000 that got selected by United Media, in some way you would hit the jackpot of a career. Whereas these guys, they neither have a proven track record nor a pointable, livable wage that they can hold up and show you.
Well, listen, that's the most important thing right there. The thing that's really important to note here is that I think that's the most telling part, is that there's the first red flag, I guess, is that people are coming to you, you know? I mean, let's take an for example, Blizzard, the guys that are making World of Warcraft. I can't tell you how many times I or other people that I know, including the Penny Arcade guys, have approached them about doing some kind of partnership. These guys have the most popular video game on the planet. They're not interested in partnerships. And the reason why is they don't need us. They don't need us to help them with their video game. It's doing just fine. So it's one of those things where if they're coming to you, if they're finding you and coming to you with this wonderful opportunity, you're already that's already the first red flag in my book.
And the second red flag for me would be dressing up what should otherwise be a normal and traditional submission packet as a contest, as though what you, the very fact that you won is a great thing. When in
that
fact
is
what
such
you're,
a worry, yes.
Yeah.
When such
fact,
a distraction.
Doing, when in fact, what? Yeah, it's the bells and whistles while someone's rifling through your pocket, and your pocket being your IP and your creative content, you know?
Right. Now, I say and I'm going to underline that because it circles back to where I think you were going in the first place. Why do syndicates sit back and allow submissions to come in, whereas other people are running contests and promotions and trying to get other people? And that is, and Dave said, why do you think that is? Or Chris said, why do you think that is? The answer is because they're not out to try to find content to publish. They're out to build up a whole lot of content so that they can have the rights to that for use in other places.
Well, no, hold on a second. The difference is because they don't need to. Look, Image Comics is not the biggest comic book publisher on the planet. Marvel and DC are the two big ones. I would say arguably Dark Horse is probably next, and then Image is last of the big four. Image does not actively seek out talent. They don't go to shows and look for people. They have people submit to them. The reason why is because when you are a legitimate company with the you know, with the resources to do what a lot of these other companies are claiming they have, you don't seek people out. People seek you out. I mean, you don't have to.
That's, I think Brad that's was talking about, I think, that.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Dave can say it better than I can, I think. Maybe I'm not explaining it very
well. No, I think
what
Brad's
saying is that if they're not sitting back and letting submissions come in, and if they're out there actively trying to get as many people into their tent as possible, maybe they're not really out to publish, you know, make a living wage for that for every single one. Maybe what they're out to do actually is to gain the rights to as many different creative properties as possible in the hopes that one of them is going to be a movie somewhere and one of them is going to be a TV show somewhere.
Yeah.
And you may not get, you know, a huge return on that.
Or also, you know what else? Oh, I'm sorry, Dave. Go ahead.
Oh, no. I was going to say one concept that I think someone might have mentioned, but we should explain for a second, is the concept of an IP farm and what that is.
Yeah.
And if you don't mind me going for a second, I'll just explain what an IP farm is.
Go.
So we all know as cartoonists, as illustrators, as comic creators, that the money in comics has always been comparatively tight. I mean, and it's gotten tighter in the last, say, 10 to 20 years as some types of print have made less and less money. But there are still livings to be made in traditional comics with Marvel, DC, with United, with Universal, with you know, Scholastic, and all the sort of comic book and comic strip publishers. There's still a living to be made, but it's less and less. But what an IP farm really, at the end of the day, is out to do is not to give you a career in comics. What they're out to do is to own your IP so that they can sell it on to the two biggest media that are really making money in today's day and age, which is film and video games. And they're not out to build your career in comics, and they're not out to build themselves as a comics publisher. What they're out to do is to fool some executive at Paramount that this book has sold X amount of titles or that this strip is doing X amount of movement in the industry so that they can then sell the pitch for $200,000, of which they pocket the majority and give you a pittance.
Oh, God, ain't that the truth? And, Dave, you know, because you're involved in the land of La-La in Hollywood, but I have a friend who was making the rounds, pitching his story ideas to different people. He worked with a friend of his, Mike Kunkel, who worked in animation. So they had a lot of ins with all the animation companies and stuff. And they had come up with a bunch of pitches that they were going around and pitching to people. And the first question is this a comic book? Is it a comic book? Is this a comic book? And they're like, well, no, it's not a comic book. We came up with it. Well, we want it to be a comic book. All right, so then they would publish it as a comic book, just about run them maybe 2,000, and they'd go back, and the people in the studios would be like, is this a comic book? And they'd say, yes, it is, and throw one across the table. They'd be like, awesome.
Right.
Wow.
My wife calls that sort of thing the urinal pitch, and here's what she means by that. When some guy buys a pilot, right, he's a mid-level VP for some production company or some studio, and he buys a pilot, he needs to have something so that when he's standing next to his boss at the urinal and they go, "Hey, Jim, what'd you do today?" He goes, "Bought a pitch from this comic book, going to be a big hit." So that he has some way to frame it to his boss who barely understands comic books anyway. You know
right,
I mean?
Right.
But it's that idea of the urinal explanation. He needs basically a quick elevator pitch for what he did today in terms of the four pitches that he bought.
It's and not that's even an elevator.
Because Glow always jokes around that that's where half of the business is done. So that's the big concern that I have, is that cartoonists for a pittance, and let's be honest, $10,000, $15,000, even if it's $30,000, is a pittance for your title or your IP or your concept in comparison to what that company could potentially make with one good-sized hit or even one mid-sized pitch in Hollywood.
I think that actually bears being discussed more, is that the idea that they have no reason to offer you the lion's share or even a reasonable share of it once, if it does get rolling, you know? There's no way that $30,000, that's a lot of money. These guys are being square with me. No, that's a sliver if they're going to offer you that much.
Well, right? I mean, look, the if we're talking about the hopes that your stuff is going to make it to Hollywood one day, I mean, even people that get really great deals, it's rare that the stuff ever makes it to any kind of fruition. And then if it does, it could not even make it on TV, and the option money is usually the only money you get. I have a couple friends.
If you get any money for it at all.
Yeah, did you ever read Ultra, Chris? The Luna Brothers? Yeah, that was made into a movie. The girl that was the wife in 300 played Ultra. It was made into a TV show. Made to a pilot. Never went anywhere.
Yeah.
Never picked up. You know, and then, you know, Kirkman's been on and off with Invincible in different stages. It just may never happen. But, you know, that's why these companies want so many properties. Because the odds of anything ever making it to a stage that makes a profit is rare.
Right.
So you just shotgun it. You just shotgun blast it across the wall and hopefully something sticks.
And that's why I think the phrase IP farm is a powerful one, because if you imagine your title like one stalk of corn next to 10,000 other stalks of corn, that's what you are to this company, is that you're just one more thing in their stable that they can go into a studio, and when Paramount says, "We need a Western," they go, "Ha, we got 50 Westerns for you. Here are the pitches." Or they go, "You know, we need a woman-centered lead that she's spunky, but she also has supernatural powers. Hey, we got 20 of those. Tell us which one you like."
Yeah,
so it's not like you're the nurtured concept in their stable. You're just one among 1,000, if not 2,000.
That's going to fit.
Dave, you'll appreciate this. For a while, for these two friends of mine, PVP was the "what else you got." Because they were going to these studios, and they said, "Look, do you mind if we bring your books with us?" Because a lot of times we'll say, "We got this great thing about a penguin. What else you got?" And they have nothing else. So it would be nice to throw something across the table. And I got a couple, you know... peaked interest things, you know, a couple inquiries out of it. But yeah, it's like, "We got this great thing. We have all this concept art. It's this fully fleshed idea." And the guy goes, "Awesome. What else you got?" You know, because we're not looking for that right now. We're looking for office humor. You got office humor? Or they go in with office humor. They go, "We're looking for fuzzy animals. You know, we're looking for cute animals."
Right, right.
But, you know,
and all of that is based on whatever most recent marketing report they got across their desk last week. You know,
exactly.
Well, and so there's a good chance the person offering you this deal is a company that is one of these IP farms. So that's something you might want to roll around your head whenever one of these offers or contests or inquiries come across your table. You know, what's in it for them? What's in it for you? Another possibility, and I'm seeing this a lot online, is a group of people or a company that have come up what they believe to be the next Web 2.0 big deal. And it's more of a business model based around some code or the concept of a website that's going to make money from advertising, and they just need content to have people to have a reason to come to it.
And it's always airtight. It's always the best.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way that you can – there's no question you can ask that I'm going to come back negative to, because it's all clear. It's
right. And
what
so,
do you mean by that?
Usually when they answer the question, it starts with this phrase. That's the beauty of blank. You know what I mean? Like, well, how is this going to make me money? Well, that's the beauty of Geigertronics 2000. You don't want money because you're so darn happy in the first place.
Or just to make it shorter, that's the beauty part.
Exactly.
Like, I don't know. Well, elaborate. What is that? That's the beautiful part. That's what you're going to like.
I don't understand. What is that? What does that mean?
The beauty part is just that, just what you just said.
And if you're sitting across from them at a table, that's when they order you another latte. You know what? Hold on. Before I answer that, another latte for my friends here.
Oh, my God. I was at one of those.
And then they let the money clip fall out of their wallet. Whoops. A lot of money in there.
You know what?
Sorry.
I don't even need that money clip.
I had a guy start taking out cell phones to show me how many live cell phones he had.
Oh, wait a minute, Brad. I know who you're talking about. Was this that one company? Brad, was this that one company that was trying to pitch us to offer our content on their cell phone? And you met with them in Philly?
I can neither confirm nor deny that that was the case.
Oh, wow. Did you meet with them separately? Mm-hmm. Not that it's the person I'm thinking of.
You guys are describing that scene out of Glengarry Glen Ross where he shows that one guy his watch and says, "This watch costs more than you make in 1 year."
ABC, always be closing. But tangential aside, yeah, you guys are absolutely right. It's always this airtight deal, and it's always the biggest thing. And you got it. You know what? And this goes for all these things we're going to talk about in this segment. You've got to ask yourself, who needs who more badly?
Uh-huh.
Do I need them more badly, or do they need me more badly? You know, and so many of these things that come across my desk, like text links, you know, somebody wants to put a text link on my site. And see, on the surface, it seems so very simple to just give them a text link. And until you start researching it and find out, well, you know, sometimes doing that might bring your page rank down in Google, for example. And then you start to ask yourself, do I need them more badly or do they need me? And in a lot of cases, they need me worse than I need them. If they're trying to sell something that I know that I can sell darn well, and we're going to come around to this, if they're trying to sell something that I know I can sell darn well off my site, I always ask myself, are there more evil ink readers on my site or on their site?
Well, that was the problem with that phone company. They wanted to put our content on the cell phones, and then we said, "Well, what do we do then?" Well, you guys have your audience, and they come to our page and they buy your stuff because they like your stuff. Well, we're driving their traffic then. And what if they buy something else that's not mine? Do I get a cut of that? No.
Exactly.
They don't bring anything to the table.
No, Chris, you're forgetting.
So you're
not like, of course you get a cut of that. It's one penny on every dollar that is spent over the $100 mark. And we're like, what? Wait a minute.
And then they're quick to add that that's the best going rate in the business.
Right.
Yeah.
Don't think ill of us.
You're not going to find a better rate in cell phone delivered text transcripts of comic book punchlines.
That's when you find out that when the suit that he's wearing at the meeting it's got those fold-in tabs like a paper doll. If you just walk around, he's wearing a barrel.
And then you're like,
I thought you were going to say it was like rented from the men's warehouse.
No, it's worse than that. It's
you're
just paper.
Like, wait, you look.
And he pulls out a Polaroid. Look how many suits I have in my closet. That's my closet.
Look at my wife. This is my wife, and it's Cheryl Teague. That's my wife.
It's got a stock photo of that.
There's something to be said for what you guys are saying, though, and that is, and we're getting a little bit off topic here, but that happens every now and again. But when you guys find, and you guys, as your comic strip and as your comics mature, you're going to find yourself in more of these situations. Let your BS detector run free, because you're going to find out that if you let it run, your BS detector is going to show you a lot more than anything else. If somebody's sitting there and he's really trying to impress you with how much money he's got, how savvy he is, how you know, if he's really trying overly much to present his image to you, in other words, if he's selling the sizzle and not the steak, then you know that you're in a bad situation. You got to run.
I remember when I talked for the first time to somebody at a syndicate. I was in junior high. I had sent off what is the only submission package I ever sent off. I was certainly not ready. And I got mostly form letters back from everyone. But I don't know if you guys remember this syndicate, but it was called Lou Little Enterprises. They had one
was
or two.
Lou spelled L-E-W?
Yes, it was, Brad.
Okay, yeah, I know.
He actually left me a real personal message saying, you know, you're not ready yet, but you will be one day. And, you know. Hey! I'm on a podcast here. We don't care about your World of Warcraft. I just dropped meat on the floor, too. It's falling apart.
What?
I had
that
a fork full of
random non sequitur. Boy, I dropped meat on the floor. Dang.
Oh, no, the meat that I had on my desk.
Look, what's Lou Little Enterprises, back to what's important. Lou Little Enterprises, he left me a personal note on stationery with his number on it, and I called. Like, I was like, I want to ask for one more chance. So I called him, like, look, I know you don't think I'm ready, but I am. Please take me. And he talked to me about it, and he's like, look, even if you were to come on board, I always tell everyone that comes on board, don't quit your day job right away. Because there's no guarantee we're going to get you in enough papers to support you. It's a small, it's a slow process, and we build you up, and we try to sell you, and we get you out there. That's the kind of stuff you hear from people that have legitimate businesses to run.
Right.
You know? And this isn't to say, I think it's fair that we also point out that you're not going to find some deal where it's like, hey, kid, we're going to give you a great page rate. You get to keep the rights. We'll take 1% of movie money. You know, there's any contract that you sign with anybody, they're going to get an equal to share to a little bit more than you get. I mean, even the good deals.
Yeah.
It's got to benefit both parties.
Right, and that's what I was going to say, and that is, am I a little bit weird when I read a contract that I think I'm getting screwed a little bit, I feel much more comfortable than when I read a contract where I think that, oh my God, this guy doesn't know what he's doing, I'm totally taking advantage of him, I'm making way more money than I should, I've got to sign this thing. I feel a little bit better when I see a contract where I'm getting screwed a little bit.
Well, if it's promising, if there's nothing in the contract that looks negative, you wonder where the negative is hidden.
Right.
Yes, that's another way of saying what I'm thinking, yes.
Oh, I wasn't trying to correct you.
No. I'm just saying that you said it a lot better than I did.
You got to get this crap concise, Brad, okay? You're losing me.
Brad, he's dropping meat over there. You got to help him out.
I got a fork full of meat. I can't keep this stuff on the fork. That's how tender it is.
Oh, I thought you were taking a part-time job as a butcher.
No, I was talking.
Scott,
here's what happened.
That sounds like a metaphor. I'm telling you, after the meeting with this guy, I could not keep my meat on the fork.
My wife brought me dinner, right? Because I have to eat before I come over to your house, Chris. She made roast. So I'm sitting here. I'm talking to you guys. And I, like an idiot, I go, this little piece of meat on my fork is not enough. I need a second piece. I'm going to double meat it. Then Ashley sits over there next to me, forgets I'm on a podcast, and is like, blah, blah, Warcraft. So I turn to her. My fork comes up in the air. I turn to yell at her. And when I come back, my fork, there's now one piece of meat on my fork. The second, I've lost one piece of meat.
Gravity, you trickster.
Gravity, you cruel mistress. contracts are, and you know what, people, and that's another conversation that I swear to God I'm not going to take us on another tangent, because I really am going to try and bring this back, but it's important to read a contract, and when I say that, it's important for you to read a contract, not for you to rely on what somebody else says about a contract, even us. Right, you got to read your own contract and make up your own mind. And because I see sometimes people say, "I've heard this that if I sign up with XYZ, they have all the rights to my stuff." And I've gone back and read that contract, and I see where you might think that, but if you really read the contract clearly, it doesn't say that at all. In fact, it leaves you a number of loopholes out of that, and we'll come around to that in a little bit. I know exactly what I'm talking about, even though no one else does. But you got to read your contract, and if you need help, you got to sign a lawyer on to read that contract for you and explain it to you in meticulous detail before you start getting into this. And that brings me back to the next thing, because I think we've pretty much gone over that, and that is signing with companies that can do what you can do perfectly well for yourself. And by that, for me, and I don't speak for the other three, for me that means people who are asking me if they can sell my PDFs. All right?
Anybody understand what he said? All I heard was a bunch of Philly gutter speak.
Am I unclear today?
All I heard was a bunch of grunts and pops and clicks and buttons.
No, I got it.
I'm just giving him a hard time.
Johnny Sirloin over there was the only person that did it.
Johnny Sirloin?
Well, that's because you're filled with nutrients and vitamins that you need to understand Brad.
Please, someone.
All I had today was a half an onion.
I want, from now on, I want to be known as Johnny Sirloin. That is my name.
Hey, Johnny Sirloin.
Yes, eh? Johnny Sirloin. Yes. Dang, yes.
He put the hit on Big Hand, see? It's all coming apart at the seams. Johnny Sirloin.
Big Hand. All right,
that's awesome.
So companies that want to sell PDFs of my comic. Brad, why is that bad?
Hey, listen, selling PDFs is the easiest thing in the world. You can set that up with a PayPal button, pal. You don't need anybody to help you sign or sell a PDF.
I like it when Brad gets pissed.
This is one that kind of burns me. I'm sorry. And I will put a caveat on there in a minute. But for right now, for today, for May 2008.
Yeah.
For today, you don't need anyone's help in signing or selling a PDF. It's the easiest thing in the world. And you've got to ask yourself, for me, you've got to ask yourself, is there more Evil Ink readers coming to my site today or going to this PDF seller site? And if so, I should have a better chance of selling PDFs of my work on my own site than someone else's site. Now, that someone else is going to come back and say, well, yeah, but we're going to introduce your strip to a lot more new readers. And that's a completely different issue. That's a marketing issue that you've got to solve for yourself. That doesn't have anything to do with selling PDFs on this other person's site. You can, and the amount, I guarantee you, for right now, the amount of extras that you pick up from people who were not introduced to your strip originally is insignificant. Or at least that's how I really feel about it.
I think you're right.
Well, I think Brad, where a lot of people got flummoxed is they're like, but the page rates that they're paying on this or the book rates that they're paying far exceed anything that I could make. And the argument I told a lot of people is, I said, at the time, this came up among cartoonist circles, and I said, I bet you 10 to 1 that what they're doing right now is burning through venture capital.
Yeah.
Because their business model is not bringing in enough cash where they should be paying out these rates. And sure enough, I think it was like 2 months later, they're like, hey, guess what? Rates going down. And then a month later, if I remember correctly, guess what? Rates going down again. And the bottom line is it's unsustainable. They probably got a few to $10 million of VC money. And they're burning through it, and the ad money that they're bringing in is not enough to maintain that business model.
And the question you have to
caveat. There's my caveat. Those people that jumped in at the very beginning probably might have made a pretty smart decision.
Right.
And I'm gonna put a caveat on the caveat, because once you sell a PDF, that thing can be copied at an indeterminate rate. And you're really hurting your own sales.
We got caveats coming out of our butts over here.
I've got caveats upon caveats. But
someone pick up all these damn caveats.
But I think it might have been, with an asterisk, I think it might have been a good idea for the early adapters to jump in and take that risk. And that's a managed risk, I'll grant you that. But for people right now, in today's, as of May 2008, forget about it.
Drama. Oh, the drama. I love it. Oh,
man.
Look, here's the thing. A lot of people will say things to me, and I know they've said them to you guys too, because I've heard them at the cons. They come over and they sound very some of them are in awe and sound in awe, and some of them just sound very envious of what they perceive to be some great business acumen that we all have. And what I keep trying to tell them, especially when it comes to people who want to buy the book and people who talk to us in the panels, is that I really think that, you know, to get by and not really screw yourself royally, all you need is common sense and a little bit of, I'm going to say a bad word, you need some common sense, you need a little bit of balls, you need to take some risks. And then you need to know when to defer to someone else's expertise. And that's really all there is to it. Mm-hmm. And, God gave you two of the most awesome tools available to you to help you navigate these waters. He gave you the most advanced computer in the world, which is your brain, and he gave you the most advanced alarm system in the world, which is your stomach. This is a lesson that my dad told me when I was a kid.
Yeah, I like where this is going.
If you'll know in your stomach, you'll feel it in your stomach if something's wrong. You know, you have the tools. Okay, you have the tools to figure out, maybe not the answer to the problem, but to figure out there's a problem, and you can have the common sense to find the answers you need, whether it's on the internet, in a book, going to your library, calling a pro bono lawyer, talking to your dad, you know, asking your parents if they know anyone that has an area of expertise in this field. It's really not that difficult. And so, you know, I think that a lot of this comes from experience. The reason why when I see these PDF companies offering you what I call a guaranteed rate, in other words, look, don't worry about whether we have a business model in place. X amount of downloads, you get X amount of money. That throws up a red flag for me. The only reason I know that is because I've had experience with that situation in the past, and I know to avoid it. But it's not that I'm smart enough to figure out something. It's just I've been burned by that before. You know, right. During the dot-com boom, I was promised a guaranteed ad rate, regardless of whether ad inventory was sold. And that lasted all of 3 months. Then the ad rate went down. Then it was capped. And then, you know, the guaranteed promised money got less and less and less until they were done. So the other question you have to ask yourself, and I think I'm really curious what Brad has to say about this, is a lot of these people that have signed up for some of this stuff have said, look, I know it's venture capital money. I know it's only going to last 3 months. But the contract doesn't screw me. I have an easy out. I've looked it over. And why not take somebody's money for 6 months or 3 months while the money's good? And I have to ask how you guys feel about this, but when you know it's some guy, I mean, that's somebody's money. I know it might be an investor or some venture capitalist, which seems like a faceless thing, but if we're not working together towards building some business that's going to hopefully, potentially, I'm all for taking a risk with somebody. But when you know you're just going to take somebody's money for the purpose of taking it while the taking's good,
Thing is that while you're taking that money and during that 3 months you think that everything's awesome, are you even bothering to develop your own production system and making your own money, or are you just like, this is going to last forever? Because I can't think of a single time that I've ever taken any entity up on that kind of thing and not regretted it later, or come out at the end of it going, well, not only is it over, but I should have taken this time to develop my stuff and been more independent. And I didn't, so now I'm back where I was 3 months ago.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's the key word, and this is a running theme in every one of the podcasts I think we've done to date. Independence. Given the tools that are at our hands right now, there's not a whole lot that can be asked of us that we can't do on our own.
Well, and I do want to say that there is something to be said about outsourcing a lot of this stuff. I mean, look, the bottom line is independence is great because you own everything and you have the control and nobody can do anything that you don't like with your property and you keep all the money. The downside is you're responsible for all of it now and you're responsible for putting in the time for all of it. So selling stuff out of your house directly instead of hiring a fulfillment center to do it is awesome because you control it, you control the quality control, and you keep all the money. But the downside is now you have to run a fulfillment center out of your house.
Right, but a lot of the people we're talking to, I mean, and I can see where that might be something when you progress to a certain stage.
Yeah.
But a lot of the people we're talking to, independence. Now, a lot of the people we're talking to are not ready to hire a fulfillment center yet.
And
for the general audience of Webcomics Weekly, independence. with the idea that later on, when you and you'll know when the time is right, because at that point you will have become a very experienced business person, you may be starting to outsource some of this stuff. But right now, I'd be very suspicious for anyone that says that they can offer you things like wider exposure. You can get wider exposure all by yourself using marketing techniques that we outline in the book, viral marketing, and a lot of other things that you can easily pick up at your local library, okay? And I would be also very suspicious for anyone that offers you huge amounts of money for something that you know darn well does not have a big cost factor.
And I also want to say that when someone offers you a contract or someone offers you an opportunity, I think the first instinct of especially an undiscovered cartoonist is to be terrified to question anything and terrified to ask for anything. And I think that it's very important to get across. And even once it was gotten across to me, I had a hard time accepting it, that it is the norm. It is not an exception or a rarity. It is the norm for there to be negotiations on a contract every single time. There's always a back and forth. There's always clauses that either party does or doesn't like, and it is 100% okay. In fact, even if you look at the contract and you're okay with everything, still question something just to see how they react, in my opinion. But
I'll tell you what, if there's ever 10 seconds that somebody needs to rewind and listen to again, it's what Scott just said.
There's nothing wrong with saying, I don't like this clause. I don't like this paragraph. This paragraph concerns me. I would like it changed to this. What if we do, you know, or offering an alternate solution. For example, let's say someone says, I'm going to give you X amount of money guaranteed no matter what for your downloads. And you say, how about you just pay me this rate for stuff that is, you know, for sure downloaded as opposed to this for everything. You offer an alternative. There's nothing wrong with coming back to it. It's not like someone's going to say, hey, how would you like to join my group and be a part of my publishers? Here's the contract. And then you say, I don't really like this clause. They're not going to go, well, you've questioned it, so it's off the table. I guess you're not what we were looking for.
You know what?
For.
If they do that, run away in the other direction as fast as you can. You just
it directly goes back to what Scott was saying about taking someone's money. If Dark Horse came to me, and I've never worked with Dark Horse and probably never will, but if Dark Horse came to me and said, we want to do a Sheldon book, if I asked honest and genuine questions, here's the deal. When they approach me and when I approach them in a contractual way, we're basically holding hands together and jumping into a venture together. So they want to know, and I want to know, that both of us have serious intent, that we've thought about this, that this isn't just some fly-by-night thing. So when Scott says ask a question, it's not just good business sense. It actually betrays a seriousness of purpose, that you're in this. You're willing to – that you are taking a serious dive into this, and contractually you're going to be a good business partner. So, I mean, anytime I've ever entered into a contract with somebody, when somebody starts asking questions, and sometimes it's me, sometimes it's them, I always take it as a good sign that, look, this is an honest broker that wants to do this right.
I think when you come to a table and start negotiating seriously and honestly, your stock goes up in the eyes of the person across the table. And I think that, unless you're being a jerk, you know, but if you're doing it honestly and forthrightly, your stock goes up because immediately they know that you're not some wide-eyed kid that has some unrealistic ideas of what's going to happen in this contract.
Right.
Yeah.
And here's one thing to keep in mind about contracts is that when a company, whether or not the mindset that you entered into with it was serious, well, let me back up. If you enter into a contract thinking, well, the money's not that good, but you know what? If I play my cards right, eventually they'll give me back my IP. And we've talked about this before, guys, between the four of us, because we know cartoonists that have said this. If you think that a company that's in any way signing a contract with you is just going to hand you back your IP, that's a ridiculous, ridiculous
thought.
That is
never, ever, 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 ever going to happen, ever. Never.
But guys, why would they want to hold on to it if they're not going to use it?
Because
why wouldn't they just give it back to me?
They're going to use next month, let alone next year. They're going to hold on to everything.
Because the bottom line is it costs them absolutely nothing to keep that contract in the drawer and to keep your IP in the drawer.
That's absolutely
It's an asset. And even if the company goes bankrupt, oh my God, if you think a company that you've signed away full or partial rights to of your work, once they go bankrupt, that you magically just ding back to you, that's them going bankrupt is the worst thing that could happen. Because now your property that they own is a part of their assets, and that's all there is to the worth of their company. And so every creditor, every bank, every vendor that they owe money to gets crack at your property because it's a part of their assets.
And let's not also forget what happens when you sign to a company that's actually part of a larger organization. In other words, it's part of a conglomerate. What happens if you sell your contract to that company for a very, very good deal, and they turn around and sell it to one of their sister organizations for a dollar? Now you're owned by a sister organization. You're playing to their tune. 50 cents has gone into your pocket out of that 50% deal. And now you're wondering what the heck just happened to the thing that you poured your life and soul into.
Right.
And it's really not an unrealistic scenario.
No, I mean, just look, for example, this is a bad comparison maybe, but let's say you were doing business with the Wall Street Journal. Huh? What? I was going to say, let's say you're doing business with the Wall Street Journal, which for the last, I think, 80 to 100 years has been a family-owned company. And then, bada bing, they get bought out by Rupert Murdoch and Fox. And if you had any IP that was contractually tied into Wall Street Journal, well, guess who now owns your butt worldwide? Fox, you know? And it's a very different company with a very different set of obligations that you're doing business with, that they still own you and your IP. So, granted, that doesn't relate to comics, but I'm sure we could find one in some small company that got bought out by a big company in comics, but you get where I'm going.
Now, listen, I'll tell you right now, I talked to Bill Willingham this weekend. This weekend? Geez, was that – everything blurs together. At the Emerald City Comic Con, whatever weekend we were there.
Like 3 months ago.
Who gives a shit? I don't know. I have meat on my fork.
Double meat or single meat?
Single meat. I ain't doing that double meat stuff anymore.
Yeah, well, once.
Bill Willingham was the guy who introduced me to independent comics. For me, growing up in Iowa, comics represented everything on the comics rack at Walden Books. Mm-hmm. That was it. It wasn't until I moved to Dallas that I went into a comic book shop and saw independent comics. And Bill did a comic at the time in the 80s called Elementals for a company called Kimiko. That's where Matt Wagner's Mage and Grendel came out of as well. And I was talking to him this weekend, I was talking to him the weekend I saw him in 1845 about how much I really enjoyed Elementals and would love to see a trade of it. And I said, do you just not like the work? Why wouldn't you make a trade of it? And he says, oh, I don't know the rights to that. And I said, oh, well, and Kimiko's gone. And he says, oh, no, Kimiko was bought out by this guy. And he had just inherited some money or something. I don't know the deal. But some guy bought Kimiko and then ran out of money. And everything got shelved. Everything. And he just refuses to sell the rights to anything. And there's no recourse. He just owns it and he shelves it. Because eventually he'll get around to getting the money to bring that stuff out of...
So he thinks.
Yeah. And
well,
so
it's going to die and then it's going to go to an inheritance and there's a whole deal there.
Yeah.
You know, actually, can I switch gears for 1 second? Because here's an interesting thought we've never broached, and it just occurred to me. You know how before we talked about artists that we admire or cartoonists that we admire? I from a very different perspective, I got to tell you, the older I get in cartooning, the two artists that I admire from a business sense more than anybody else, Jeff Smith and Jim Davis.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, go ahead with that thought.
Because the older I get, the more that I realize that those guys took the financial risk when they were young. Those guys took on the business burdens when they were young, and the older they get, the more and more and more it pays off for them.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you guys think?
And those are two completely different sides of the spectrum. One is very corporate. One is very independent. And yet they've both followed their own path, and they've done it very, very wisely.
Yeah. But
That's the smartest thing that's incredibly wise.
To reinforce that for you, Dave, have I ever told you the story about when I met Jeff Smith for the first time?
Maybe, but go ahead and tell it again.
Well, it was his first tour with Bone, and he came to Dallas. And I was really excited to meet him because he was the first guy that I knew of that did a comic book that had cartoon art in it. You know, it wasn't superheroes with realistic anatomy. It was cartoony. Right. So I brought him some of my Captain Amazing stuff and showed him, and he really liked it. And I said, listen, how do I do this? How do I get an independent comic like yours? And his face just went from happy to mad, like pissed. And he's like, you know what? I'm not going to answer that question. Because every time I do, and I'm honest with people, I get nothing but weird stares and angry looks. Because the truth of the matter is, if you're asking me that question, you've got no business trying. Because you're starting a small business, and you need to get business loans and a business plan, and you need to do investments, and you have to investigate printing and printers. And I mean, he just went on and on about, look, there's a lot to this. And he was like, and you're not going to get it. You're not going to call some comic company. No comic company is going to come sweep you up and make you a star. There's just a lot to it, and there's a lot of research involved. And if you have to ask me that question, then you've got no business trying. Yeah. And I left that signing thinking that Jeff Smith was a jerk, and screw that guy, I'll make it. But it was the best advice I ever got.
Probably the nicest thing he could have done.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I've seen him since then, and we've talked about it. And he doesn't remember. He's like, God, that I was a jerk. I'm so sorry.
No, he was a favor.
But he's right. I mean, if I can, I think it's a concept that I've misappropriated from. Have you guys ever heard of the philosophical concept of the greatest possible good? That in every situation there's a. I think it's Socrates, but I'm bad. It might be Plato. I don't know. But the idea is that it's not moral relativism, but it's the idea that, like, if you're in a situation, the specifics of that situation, there is a greatest possible good for that situation. So when we talk about independence as an artist and not signing away things and doing a lot of it yourself, it's not because we enjoy or promote the idea of dealing with all the hassle of business crap, and a lot of it is, or that we enjoy printing our own books or doing our own fulfillment or this or that as far as cultivating your own business. It's because at this particular moment, between the dying state of a lot of very traditional big earners in print and the new kind of business models that are developing online, the greatest possible good is this idea that you as an independent can make enough money to live on. There's not enough for you and a company to split. And there, which is why there's a lot of IP farm, because they're not making money on your current business. They're making money on your future business. And there may not be enough money for you and a traditional syndicate or publisher to split online, but there's enough money for you as an independent person to make a living online if you're smart about it. And I think that's why we promote independence as the greatest possible good now for a cartoonist, because it's an interesting state right now financially, because there's no real big players that can be a kingmaker in your career online. Even though these companies that say they're going to win a contest are a big kingmaker, they're not a kingmaker. They're not going to do anything for you that, like Brad said, that you can't do for yourself. So, and that's why I think it's not that we're like, yay, hurrah, I love doing QuickBooks. By no means. We're just saying the artist that controls their own business right now is in a much better shape and place for a changing landscape.
I like it.
And if that doesn't put a neat little bow on this discussion, I don't know what does.
Well, I'm all about neat little bows. There we go.
Although I stepped all over what Chris was going to say. I'm sorry.
You talk now, Chris.
Yeah.
Here's what I have to say.
Anyhow, when it comes to comics.
Goodness.
And then it's just running. It doesn't end with that. All right, guys, you had your laugh. Anyway. Do you hear a buzzing noise? No, I seriously don't have anything else to add. I really didn't.
Well, we have. It looks like we've eaten up a lot of this time, but I do have one quick topic, and I think everybody can throw one quick one in, and then we can wrap this up.
All right.
And that, is that okay with you guys?
Yeah.
Okay, here's the deal. Just recently, this came up in a conversation among the four of us, and we wanted to throw it open and see what we could get from you guys as well. And that is this. You read a webcomic, you're a fan of a webcomic, and you want to support that web cartoonist. But, like everybody else, your pocketbook is as tight as ever it's been. And you're wondering, how can I support my web cartoonist who brings me a free product every day without paying money? And let me tie this all into what Scott was talking about with Emerald Comic Con. Not so long ago, we all appeared at Emerald City Comic Convention, and we a lot of our people who came out and saw us there had very nice things to say about us in their blogs or in live journal posts or on their MySpace page, wherever it was. We're finding out now that those blogs and those posts have been heard and recognized. And the people at Emerald City have said, hey, that's really nice. You know, we've heard already doing some searches online that you know, that this was a good thing. And that's what a comic convention promoter wants to hear. When they bring us in as guests, they want to know that people came to their convention to see us. So everyone who wrote a blog post about seeing Scott, Dave, Chris, or I at Emerald City Comic Con did us a huge favor, because they just increased the chances that maybe we'll get invited back again sometime, right? So everybody who did that, we owe you a huge thank you, and it didn't cost you a darn thing. You might have only written three sentences. I went to see Scott, Dave, Chris, and Brad at Emerald City Comic Con, bought a book. It was really great seeing them. Three sentences, and you did us a huge favor, because cumulatively, that does a lot for us. So I wanted to throw that out to the group. What are ways that your fans, your readers, help you in a non-monetary way?
Crickets. Non-monetary, nonsense.
Crickets.
Brad, I don't know why crickets would help. I used to own a snake. And
unless you were a Chinese cricket collector, I hear they're very popular in China.
They're good luck. Other than blog posts, I don't know, because that is probably the biggest single thing that anybody can do that does not involve money is word of mouth for you.
Yeah.
I've got a few that come to mind, but go ahead, Dave. I think I stepped on you.
No. Let's see.
Dave's got nothing.
I got nothing.
Don't ask him.
This is me hemming and hawing. Well, Brad, I got to tell you, the best idea that I've ever heard, burn up time.
It's very, very good. And
let's start from the most basic thing. Like any artist, positive feedback is a wonderful thing. So on forum posts and in personal emails, there is not an artist alive that doesn't appreciate the, oh, my God, you made my day today. I needed it. I was having a tough day at work, or my wife is sick, or my cat just died. You know, and you
jeez.
Know, we can shrug those off. But those, well, I'll speak only for myself. Those emails make my day. It's 90% of the reason why.
You don't have to kill a cat to send me an email, though.
Look at Brad one-upping me. I tell you what, if they kill a cat and you kill a cat, Brad Geiger will take that email for free. No cat needs to be killed. All I ask is that you kick him slightly across the room. Brad Geiger. I don't know where that was going. So that's a quick and easy one, because a jolt in the spine always helps a cartoonist or any artist do what they do. So that's a simple and easy one.
Here's
and now on
one.
To Chris.
Go ahead, Chris.
Oh man, I didn't know we were going to be put on the spot.
Let me do one. Chris, I've got one while you think.
All right, you go ahead.
I know that a lot of people have written me upset about the blog PvP Makes Me Sad, but I got to tell you, The guy that posts that, the anonymous guy who posts as a fake Scott McCloud, he has, and I should probably not say this out loud, but I guess I've mentioned it there. When that thing kind of derails into negativity, I don't think anyone's more disappointed than the author of that blog. But there has been, out of that blog, some legitimately constructive criticism. Like, well-thought-out criticism about my work that's made me go, huh. And it's improved my work, and it made me wonder if maybe this is the first time that from my reader base I have received truly constructive criticism that is about the work itself. And it hasn't been since college, and not that it's easy to take. Criticism in any form is difficult to take, but not since my academic days in college when – we had part of our art classes was the constructive criticism phase. Have I ever experienced it? I've never experienced with my comics from my reader base. But, you know, truly constructive and positive criticism, I think, goes a long way. And especially goes a longer way than some snarky email.
Well, I have to say that's incredibly mature of you. I could never feel that way about a blog that was titled Evil Inc. Makes Me Sad. Because right there, I would not be able to accept anything that fell underneath that header. So that to hear you say those words, I have incredible respect for you. I couldn't do it.
Listen, Brad, don't have too much respect for me. There's days when I'm posting ranting horrible epitaphs at the people on that website, and I'm in text screaming at him and calling them all a-holes. But
I visited that site once or twice, and I couldn't stick with it because I got offended on your behalf just because it fell underneath that header. And I don't want to discount what you said about constructive criticism. Constructive criticism is very good, and if what this guy has done has resulted in constructive criticism, that's fantastic. But I want to encourage any readers that we might have out there that might think they're doing me a favor by starting Evil Inc. Makes Me Sad, I will never go to that site. I am not as mature as Scott is. I don't have it in me.
I demand
that someone...
Don't
you dare tell me how to do my job.
I demand. I am demanding. I will not do another comic strip until someone makes an Evil Inc. Makes Me Sad.
No, please don't say that. I can't take
it. You know what?
I'll set it up right now.
I'm logging into WordPress right now.
I couldn't take it. I can take constructive criticism, but if somebody was posting on a regular basis how that comic strip made them sad, I certainly could not go there to find constructive criticism.
It's not always about being sad, though.
No, it's not. You've read it, right, Chris? Do you read it all the time?
I've read it, and the difference between – here's the thing. The difference between – that site and a lot of other sites, which are just incendiary garbage, where they write the worst possible thing about a webcomic that they think deserves it and try to stir up drama. That site is actually – they go out of their way to say, look, we are fans of Scott. We've enjoyed his work for a long time. Sometimes we have criticism. Sometimes we uphold. We love what he did. You know, but – and it's a kind of an – it's a much more open and honest – discussion than the title PvP Makes Me Sad would lead
you
to believe.
It's the closest Oh, go ahead, Brad.
Can't get past the title.
It's the closest I've ever had in a relationship with readers to the relationship I have with you guys where we criticize each other's works and try to figure stuff out. Like, the only thing lacking, the only difference between us discussing it and those guys discussing it is I don't have a relationship with them as peers and colleagues. You
those
know,
lovers.
I would never open up a conversation with you by saying your comic strip makes me sad. I might say, hey, Scott,
you gotta get Brad. You gotta get past it.
The title is not that big of a deal.
You gotta get past it, Brad.
Brad is gonna be sitting on the John later tonight, elbow on chin or whatever there, and just going, PvP makes me sad. PvP makes me sad.
You know what? Brad Geiger makes me sad.
Don't
take
that.
Here's the image, the scene that just popped into my head.
Respect you even more. I always respected you, but it really makes me respect you that you can see past that and find some constructive criticism.
Can't, Brad. Listen to me. Do you hear what I'm saying? Listen to what I'm saying. I read that site and lose my effing mind over it. I get pissed off.
But also said that you found constructive criticism in it.
Yeah, I have. I mean, I can't.
Could not
listen. When someone says. PvP should – when this guy says a lot, I wish there was more emotion in the strip. And I go and look at it, and I'm like, yeah, I could have put more emotion in that strip. I can't deny that. It doesn't make me happy. I'm pissed off. Brad, think about it this way. The title PvP Makes Me Sad is referencing me, not him. It's making me sad. It's making Scott sad.
Quote Scott.
Yes.
Scott sad.
I just had this scene picture of a scene in my head where I'm visiting Brad's house and Brad calls me into a room and he goes, Scott, I want to show you something. And on the website it says pvpmakesmehappy.blogspot.com and he pats me on the back and he goes, this is for you, buddy.
And then there's only one entry and it just says, hi, Scott. I hope that's enough. I can never get past the other title, so I hope you stop at this title.
And then you scroll down, it's just a dancing baby.
Yeah. There you go. I do have one. I did think of one while Scott was talking. The idea that people linking to you and saying kind things about you and saying they really enjoyed the strip, that is excellent and really helpful and really bolsters you when you're feeling down. But also, I want to say that I recently, especially, I've had a lot of readers that are becoming increasingly creative in their participation in the forum and in the comments on my site. There's a thread in there about where they're writing song lyrics about a recent storyline that I did. And I said, if you give me 10 good ones, I will write an album. I will play the music for them. And I have people sending me pictures of their jinxlets in various places. Scott, I know you were doing that with your skull plushes.
Yeah.
Whoa, they're taking pictures of their jinxlets. I don't know.
Whoops,
oh,
okay.
The toy. I get
Yes, that's not a word we use around here, Dave. We did not adopt that phrasing. But, like, that kind of stuff is really... not only is it it's very positive for me to interact with them that way, but it kind of builds the community, and the community even becomes kind of self-policing, so that when there is somebody who's really negative, they don't really have an entry point because everybody else is, look, we're enjoying it in this way, and don't bring us down and get out of here.
Right.
You know?
Significant. Just the act of starting a forum post on a day's comment is incredibly helpful.
Well,
yes.
I disagree.
Of kicking off a conversation, right?
Scott, how do you disagree?
Please don't start forum posts about PvP. It's led to nothing but crap.
Oh, wait.
Well, there's an upper bound, and then it just kind of degenerates. But yes,
I'm just kidding.
Here's a couple more that came to me just as I was as we were talking. Going to your comic shop, your library, and or your bookstore, and asking for your favorite web cartoonist's book.
Right? Even if they have one or not.
Yeah, even if they don't have one, just put it in somebody's head. No, here's another one. If you bought a book from, and yes, I know you were giving me the berry. Here's another one. You bought a book from your favorite web cartoonist. Expose somebody else to it. You know, use that as a little bit of an evangelistic technique.
Yeah, let people borrow your books.
Yeah, I've got one too. How about taking meals to the elderly? We can all help out.
Please don't mock Brad. I don't appreciate that.
Volunteer at a soup kitchen.
Okay, I'll shut up.
Wow.
But Brad hit on the biggest one. The biggest one.
And
you
here's
can
where I get
confounded.
Oh my God.
What? I missed it.
Say it again. I'm the first one to defend Brad when you guys are jumping all over him.
No, you know what's funny about that, Chris, though? That is not true. I think we all in turn defending Brad when the other two were one or two.
Whose turn is it this week?
It's your turn to defend Brad, Chris, right?
Okay. I'm ready.
It's certainly my turn to attack him.
Okay.
And I'm playing Switzerland. This week I'm playing Switzerland. So, all right, we're good.
Big surprise.
I'm sorry,
Dave, you just go, you guys, stop. Come on.
I play the UN and go, can't we all just smile and be friendly? Let's talk about comics. Ooh. Anyway, what do you think, gents? We about wrapped up for this week?
No thanks to Brad. We are wrapped up, and I promise that first thing tomorrow, what I'll do is put this online. I'm not going to wait and forget and not get it up. So,
I think this one was a winner.
That's Please. What she said.
Scott, I am getting so tired of people saying Webcomics Weekly. I don't know about the second word in that. Weekly.
Oh, are people saying that?
Oh my
Uh-oh.
God! Yes. Oh God!
And
where? You know what? There's two things I got to say to our podcast listeners. Number one. I'm getting tired of that comment. We're seeing up. Number two, those people who spell weekly, weekly.
What are you reading, reviews in Variety? Where is that happening?
The whole review is in W. Wow, Webcomics Weekly whips Wandemonium. I couldn't come up with
that. I didn't know that was happening. I've got a couple messages for
Wicker,
our...
And you got a whole tie-in. You got a whole callback if you throw in
That's
Wicker.
That's right, Wicker. There you go.
Yeah, I got a message for our listeners, too. Message one, suck it. Message two, sit on it.
Oh, God.
What? Was that wrong to say?
Is that too much? It's too soon.
No,
too
soon. I find Scott that your unending joy towards the.
But I am going to start a blog that says Webcomics Weekly, WEAKLEY. Oh Christ.
We can learn a lot.
Oh, was the podcast late this week? Did you have to wait a little bit for? Why don't you subtract it from the $1 billion of free advice I've given you? All right. Why don't you pull your belt a little tighter and sit down and have a sip of water, take a little nibble of bread and calm down. You'll get it when you get it. How about that? Is that good enough for you? I'm eating meat over here.
I'm eating my meat.
Leave Pappy alone. Pappy's eating his meat.
Protein makes Scott cranky, apparently.
Cranky and then sleepy. Yeah, you guys are. You,
and then gassy. You guys are.
This is a sore spot for me because it's an argument I've kind of had with my dad recently. It's this mentality of, Scott, don't you understand? We love your work so much. We want it so much that we get upset when we don't get it. That's where all that's coming from. So that excuses anything we do to let you know to express that love for your work.
Pitch up your
belt. Yeah, but you know what, though? In argument to your dad's side, though, the only thing worse about people than people complaining about you is people not talking about you at all.
Yeah,
that's true.
Thank you for supporting my father, Dave.
You know what? I'm going to buy the man a beer. I think actually his
I know he's right.
Very simple.
Does
your
podcast?
Does my dad listen to the podcast?
Yeah.
Let's hope not.
Oh my God! We should have your dad onto the podcast. That would be.
Oh
great.
My God! No.
Do you want to?
Yeah.
Good.
Hold on, Dave.
No, don't call him right now.
No. Oh, trust me, I'm not going to call him right now. But Dave, if you want to, I'll have him on the podcast.
Yeah, for like 20 minutes, we'll have him on.
Listen, if for no other reason, then it'll be great radio, because I guarantee you, within 3 minutes, he'll be berating me. And you'll get to hear.
He'll be saying why I shouldn't wear underwear at night when I'm sleeping.
Guys, what I'm trying to explain to you, and what I've been trying to explain to Scotty here, is that, see, I moved to Watsonville in 1953.
I tell you, that ruined it. I kind of was hoping he had a German accent. He doesn't have a German accent?
Oh, he does. I just am not doing it.
No, he doesn't.
When his father,
really.
When his father,
he has an accent.
While we're talking about guests, one person I think we should have on, especially after chatting with him at Emerald City Comic Con, we got to have Phil Folio on at one point.
Oh yeah. You know what? Let's plan this out. Phil Folio. Well, I'll email him, and then my dad, I'll email him too.
Let's have your dad on in June for Father's Day.
Oh, Brian!
Huh. Yeah.
Please tell me nobody heard what my brother just said.
No, we couldn't hear it.
Okay, good.
I was talking over him.
I will tell you when we get off what he just said. But yes, I agree. For Father's Day, that would be awesome.
Father's Day, Scott's dad comes in for a podcast.
Wait a minute, guys! You guys have dads too. Let's get all the dads on.
Oh. Let's have the dads instead of us.
Point, it'll just be four guys bitching about how our
right,
kids
so
our kids
what are we
kids.
Doing? I don't know.
You know what's great about that? Yeah, my dad knows like nothing about comics or barely about what.
No, they'll just complain about how the kids need to find real jobs.
What did you want your son to be?
Well, here's how it's going to go down. Wait, Dave doesn't call enough. Nor does Brad. Nor does Chris.
And then
that's
one
the
dad, there'll be one dad whose only input is this.
Okay, where do I plug this in? I'm almost positive. Right? In the sweetheart, I said the USB port. That's the standard port.
All right. By the end of the podcast, all four dads talking about the weather. Because that's one thing dads talking about is the weather.
My dad would be like, I don't know why Davey gave up on football. You know, he still holds some California high school records. He shouldn't have given up on football. That's what
but you really expect us to believe that.
Yeah, way to brag there, Dave.
Hey, did you notice how I worked that in?
That's
important to my career that you know that I was.
Hey, next week we need to talk about Dave's skinny jeans.
I forgot about that.
From Emerald City. Yeah.
From Emerald City. All right, listen, I've got to go. I've got to hightail it to Chris's house for a party.
Okay. I actually do too, so. I have to go buy food.
just a follow-up from a previous week's show, I did join up on Twitter, so Dave Kellett on Twitter, DaveKellett. I'm
double
there.
L, double T.
A lot of interesting posts so far about my socks and lint. So
there was an interesting post today from you about Star Trek Deep Space Nine that I enjoyed reading.
Dave, you want me to steal your traffic? On my site, I'm syndicating the four of us's Twitter. You can read all four of us right there.
That's awesome.
You don't even need to check it out. So, there you go.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, for crying out loud.
I'm considering taking Malky's off because he's dominating. Like, I've got him on there because we have conversations on there, but he's always talking. If you go to my website, it's just Malky.
He is a machine of Twitter. He's just, he's like, guess what? Walking across the room, next post. I'm there now.
Don't call. I made it.
Next one. Thinking about heading back.
Webcomics Weekly. Scott, Dave, Brad, Chris.
See you guys in 3 weeks.
Malky's Twitter post.
Oh, boy.
This will go up 2 weeks from now, and we'll be recording another one 6 weeks from now.
Yeah. I need to edit some stuff out of this one before I post it. That's for sure.
Oh, here we go.
And see you.